the ride. Well, fans, this is definitely a first for me. I am writing this to you from the depths of a large cargo ship, which is bobbing around on a rough and raging sea. I have absolutely no idea which British port we're headed to, or when we're scheduled to arrive. For goodness sake, don't they have signposts out here? How else is the captain meant to know if we're going the right way? At this rate, I wouldn't be surprised if we ended up in the Outer Hebrides instead of Dover, Hull or Newcastle. I mean, really, this whole affair has been nothing but a catalogue of errors from the very start. Of course, I blame Bumble the Badger for getting me into this mess. He was the one who said, "I know, let's see what's in the bag by that man's car. Perhaps it's something nice to eat." To which I replied, "Good idea, Bumble. You stay here while I take a look." And so I climbed into the hold all, only to find it stuffed full of clothes instead. But before I managed to jump out again, someone zipped it shut, swung me up into the boot of the car, slammed all the doors, and then started the engine. Well, that was many days ago, when, unknown to yours truly, I was about to become live cargo on a crazy journey with no end in sight. Now here I am in the belly of a ship in the middle of nowhere, cold, tired and hungry, and wondering if I'll ever see Grumblemore again. Let me tell you, fans, travelling in a car boot from Swansea all the way to Dover is no joke, especially when the human passengers insist on making numerous pit stops along the way to visit the restroom and take refreshments. But imagine my dismay when, after parking the vehicle at around noon, somebody took out my hold-all and carried me as hand luggage onto a cross-channel ferry boat. More long hours with no food or water followed, and then at last I saw my chance to escape. The bag had been partially opened to remove a sweater, and now lay under the table of some sort of outdoor eatery, while its owner decided what to order. The food smelt absolutely delicious, and so very cautiously I emerged into the light to see how I could get some. Unfortunately for me, however, that was when the trouble started. Right across from where our group was seated, an elegant lady with silver hair was enjoying a hot chocolate and a fancy pastry. Somehow, don't ask me how, she chose the exact moment when I dropped out of the hold-all to bend down and pick up her handbag. Then, as her brain decoded that unusual sighting, a shrill scream ensued, and the entire scene descended into mayhem. With this, quick as a flash, and abandoning all thoughts of a meal, I scarpered, hotly pursued by a fat man in a striped apron. The fat man wielded a broom and chased me all the way down the street, whacking the pavement behind me in futile attempts to kill me. I soon tired of this, however, and put an end to the chase by jumping into a flower pot just as he was beeped loudly by a car for running into the road without looking. My memory is a little hazy on the sequence of events after that. Suffice to say that my flight included rides in a taxi, a bus, and a train with a strange name, something like Yuri's Comet or some such similar term. Along the way, I snatched drinks and snacks wherever I could find them, although Here it must be said that my poor knowledge of French did turn out to be a bit of an issue. For example, who knew that the French word for bread was pain? Well, clearly if I'd known that, I wouldn't have thought they were trying to sell me some sort of home remedy for stomach aches, would I? Meanwhile, when I asked for a boiled egg in another establishment, the manager got quite shirty. Believe it or not, without any provocation for myself, he came right out with it and called me an oaf. And to top it off, when I tried to buy a cup of coffee there, he wouldn't take my cash. He kept saying, "Uries, Uries," as if I was trying to pay with Uri's money instead of mine. Who is this Uri guy anyway? He must be jolly rich if he owns a train called Comet. And speaking of the Comet, that was another fiasco, wasn't it? I was sure I'd read somewhere in English that it was going to Dover, so I boarded the train at the first opportunity and found a nice quiet seat where I duly fell asleep from sheer exhaustion. But when I awoke, I got a shock. How could I possibly have known it would take me instead to a place called Amsterdam, where they actually have people who don't even speak French? Well, the only Dutch word I know is tulip. So whenever I needed to ask anyone anything, as a matter of good manners, I always made sure to include it in my question. Thus, when I wished to know where to find trains going back to the UK, I felt that it sounded much more Dutch to say, "Please can you tell me where to get tulips to Dover?" And they all understood me perfectly. As it turns out, May is a very good time for tulips in Amsterdam. Indeed, I spent the better part of a day admiring whole fields of them. However, I was forced to admit that this was rather less than helpful for the purpose of getting me home to Wales. And who knows whether I might still be there today, were it not for the kindness of a passing stranger who took pity on my plight. He gave me a free map of the city and then circled the area marked Amsterdam Port, advising me that I could hitch a ride back to the UK on a cargo ship. A cargo ship, of course! Now, why hadn't I thought of that? So, map in hand, off I trotted to the seaside. What a beautiful day it was! The sea like liquid glass, and the sun shining out of a clear blue sky. Gulls circled lazily in the warm breeze, hardly needing to flap their wings at all. They called plaintively to each other as they caught rides on the currents of air, alternately dipping and soaring as they homed in on their edible targets below. And boats! As I stood by the docks, I realised I had never, ever spied so many sea-going vessels of such different shapes and sizes. The only question that remained was, which one of the dozens before me was planning to dock at a British seaport? And genius that I am, I soon decided that it had to be the one with the most English labels stuck to its containers. My reason for that was that these labels displayed such critical warnings as flammable liquid and explosives, written in the English language alone. This led to my confident belief that the consignments were on their way to one or more linguistically challenged customers of the English-speaking variety. Well, once I deduced that much, the ship's destination was pretty obvious, really. After all, who could possibly be worse at reading foreign languages than the native inhabitants of Great Britain? And so, on the basis of that stunning leap of logic, the correct cargo boat was identified in pretty short order. Thankfully, getting aboard this vessel was an entirely straightforward affair, as most of the crew's attention was focused on readying both ship and cargo for imminent departure. Then I quickly found myself a cosy little spot to hide in, down in the bowels of the boat in the place that they call the hold. It was filled with wood chips, which smelled delightful and made a very comfortable bed. Beneath this cargo, I could hear the soft droning sounds of the engine, and all the while I was being gently rocked by the swaying motion of the water. There was food aplenty too, as this ship boasted a large and well-stocked kitchen. Indeed, I was pleased to note that with such a lot of onboard amenities, it might even be possible to enjoy my journey home. Sad to say, however, all hopes of a pleasant trip vanished like smoke once we had set sail and finally hit the open sea. The doors here are mostly left ajar, so for the first few nights I found it really easy to get up to the crew's quarters and scavenge food from the kitchen while they were asleep. The trouble began on the fourth night, when, as I repeated this routine procedure, I was surprised in the act by the ship's cook. I had finished eating and was just putting some food in my pocket for later when suddenly the lights went on. Then before I had time to turn tail and run, there was a lot of hollering and somebody grabbed me by the jacket. I promptly slipped out of the garment and made my getaway, but as I fled towards the door, the man was right behind me with a butcher's knife in his hand. Luckily for me, the commotion woke others from their sleep, and some who saw the cook brandishing a knife thought he was an armed pirate who must be overcome. And after wrestling him to the floor and then frog-marching him to the deck, luckily for the cook, one of the crew recognised him just in time to stop him being thrown overboard to the sharks. Well, I've now been aboard this ship for more days than I can count, and it's so hard to get food that I haven't eaten since yesterday. It's really cold down here too, and there's nobody to talk to. And as for the weather, I'm sick and tired of the never-ending storms which are tossing this boat about like a feather in the wind. My only pleasure is sneaking up to the deck when no one's around to see if I can spot any land on the horizon. Surely we should be there by now. I mean, how far away can England be? I think I'll go up again and take another look. Okay, fans, here I am once more on the deck, peering through a powerful telescope that one of the crew members has conveniently left unattended. And so far, all I can see is water. But wait, I think I may be wrong. Looking to the right and left, I'm sure I can make out land. There's something straight ahead, too. It looks like a woman standing very tall on a little island. She's got a large spiked helmet on her head and one arm raised high in the air as if she's waving at us. Oh, no, that can't be right. The woman's green. A green woman? Well, where in the world have they taken me? Oh, for heaven's sake, surely not. I always thought it was a weird name for a country, but if all the people are like her, then of course it totally makes sense. It's Greenland, isn't it?